Wikipedia every single day. You've never seen an ad on Wikipedia, and you've never paid to access the content. Ever wonder how it all happens? Wikipedia is written by hundreds of thousands of volunteers from around the world. The servers and administration are maintained by the Wikimedia Foundation, which is funded by donations from people like you. Give today at donate.wikipedia.org.
And while you're at it, get that off the wall Wikipedia page going. You're listening to Off the Wall on WUSB Stony Brook. And it is another edition of Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you, joined tonight by Kyle.
Yes.
Starting rather quickly tonight because, well, it's important. It's important. You know, this whole end of the world thing going on. You hear that last report in Democracy Now? Well, I was depressed by that. You know, the end of ICE. First of all, I thought it was a totally different end of ICE, so I bought the book for the wrong reasons. But still, it's an interesting read, and it's something we really need to confront because, you know, it's the only planet we have right now. And Mars isn't doing much for us.
Yeah, no, it's critical stuff. It's great to hear updated reports and some interesting perspectives and new information about some of those places that are kind of where we detect this stuff early on. And just, I think the takeaway people can remember that there's multitudes of layers of things to do, but the most immediate thing is energy efficiency and you know, being conservative in your use of things like water is one. But those are the most immediate things you can do. Make your home a little more efficient in terms of losing energy and that kind of stuff. And while you're, you know, insulating doors and windows and all that, you can think about the organizations that you're going to contribute to make broader impacts either in the legislative realm or elsewhere in your communities. But don't, please, please, please don't feel as though you can't do anything, because everyday choices, all of those choices, are a big part of your impact on the environment around you.
I hear all that, but at the same time, it's not enough. And
no,
we're kidding ourselves if we say, you know, just insulating our windows and putting solar panels up is gonna save the planet. It's not, and there's a lot more going on here. You know, hearing reports yesterday about the population of insects. Yeah, everyone's making jokes. Oh, good, no bugs anymore. Yeah, you know what? We don't have insects, we die. Seriously, that is what happens to the human race in couple hundred years. not millions of years. It's within the lifetime of our kids. That's what we're looking at. And we are still at the stage where we're debating the issues. We're debating the issues with morons who seem to think that a snowstorm means there's no global warming, that there's no climate change. We have to move beyond that. We have to start treating the people that insist on maintaining the status quo, in fact, even making things worse, tearing down the Amazon rainforest or drilling and polluting and driving the temperatures up even more. We have to start treating those people as terrorists, because that is what they are. What do you call somebody who is contributing to the end of life on all the entire planet. What do you call those people? They're nothing short of terrorists. What are they? They're gaining some short-term economic benefit from this. What do the people that are arguing the opposing point that we are in fact facing a crisis? What's in it for them? You know, what is the agenda? I always try to figure that out. The people that say, oh, it's myth. All these scientists are just collaborating together. Okay, but what is their end game? Why would they do that? It doesn't make any sense. You know, it makes perfect sense why somebody would refute it, because they're greedy. They want to make some kind of short-term profit or benefit out of it, and they don't care about future generations. But I'd like to think that most of us do, and that we are going to protect those future generations. And how do you do that? By treating those people as terrorists. I'm not saying take them out with machine guns unless absolutely necessary. No, I'm not saying that. But you have to start treating them as if they want to destroy the planet, because that is what they are going to do. It's quite simple. And if we just keep having this civilized debate where, well, you know, I disagree, I agree to your right to disagree. No, they are going to destroy the world. Don't you get it? It's so important that we act on this, that at some point we say, you know what, you're a blithering idiot, I'm not going to listen to you anymore. You know, that's treat it like Twitter, okay? Block them. You know, mute them. Do whatever you have to do. Just move past them. I'm begging. I'm begging the entire planet. Please, we have to get beyond this, or we're doomed. Doomed.
Yeah. I would say you...
Doomed! Sorry.
Be absolutely 100% on with the doom. It's absolutely upon us. And I think those people are impacting us all. Their greed, their short-sightedness, and I don't know. I could go on and on about this in particular. I think the companies, it's the usual suspects, right? It's like Monsanto with the glyphosate, whatever chemicals killing all the insects. The ideas around sustainability and whole ecosystems and that stuff has not been integrated into our capitalism yet. And I think that, like, this Green New Deal they were talking about and other things are attempts at fitting into the, like, sort of open and free market solutions. There needs to be really important, vigorous conversation there, because That is the only way we're going to graft the solutions onto our current system. But everyone needs to look at things in a more costly way to all of them, and really hear how, antibiotics are dependent on the Amazon, the ecosystem there. You know, our innovation in healthcare is wholly dependent on these sort of natural things, this biomimicry that we derive medicines from. We need to see this cost as something that impacts all of us. That's that goes for energy costs, whatever it is. We need to wean ourselves away from designing budgets on cheap fuel and cheap cheapest manufacturing practices or agricultural. Those things that make those things cheap. We bake that into our budgets, and then we don't understand why we're so dependent on the cheapest and most harmful solutions. So I think a more costly future, and not taking the cheapest route, but taking a route that maybe is a little bit more in the vein of a long-term planning concept. But we haven't got this, like, idea of system, like, integrating everything in, like, a whole system way. And reducing our impact, the habitat loss and stuff. That's why I'm really positive about hemp and, different kinds of agriculture, not all agribusiness, developing things everywhere. You know, everybody should be growing things and trying to help sink as much carbon as possible, as well as adopting these other solutions. But that New Deal, I mean, that's a good step, because we do have this sort of capitalistic sensibility. But as I said, we estimate low costs for everything, and our expectations then are hard to temper when we're faced with how much things really cost. When you're considering an about face on one technology, adopting another in like a transition period, as you know, that is argued that that's what all this cheap energy is for, is to help us transition, and then adopting and rolling out a new method of whatever it is, energy and stuff like that. We need to have very wide eyes going into these techniques, but it's all we have now. I mean, combination of awareness and these policies that are, amount to geoengineering as it gets more dire.
Yeah, and the thing is, you know, this is not a I mean, you can certainly point to the evils of capitalism and all sorts of Western world problems, but it doesn't have to be that, because it's much bigger than that. It's basically our survival as a species. We can put aside all these theories and positions on economies and governments and things like that, and unite to face the indisputable problem that is at hand. And you know, I just don't want to alienate people by doing any labeling or risking environmentalists being labeled in any way as basically standing up for one system over another system. There's only one system right now, and that's survival of not only the human race, but the planet in general. Although I have to say, in the end, the planet will win. If we are a disease on the planet, we will just be expunged and replaced with something else. It's happened before, you know. The planet has gone through many extinction events. The question is, are we going to bring about our own extinction event? That is the difference. And you know, the study that was released yesterday about insects, how their population is declining 2.5% every year. That is something. It's not a natural thing. That is directly related to human actions, such as deforestation, insecticides, all sorts of things like that. So, you know, like I said before, we get rid of insects, we die. We need insects. You know, you might not like insects, but they are part of the ecosystem. They perform indispensable tasks that we could not replace with anything. And it's incredibly stupid and short-sighted to think that we can get along without them, or without so much of the environment around us. Now, I just want to look at one other thing that really, really bugged me. There was an environmentalist back in 1988, Chico Mendes, in Brazil, who was murdered. In fact, here's a bit of trivia. His character wound up on Twin Peaks because on the second season, somebody was referred to as a friend, an environmentalist who was murdered. It was that guy. It was widely believed it was that guy written into the script. 1988, he was murdered. And just recently, the last couple of days, the environmental minister of Brazil, Ricardo Salles, put in place by the fascist dictator Bolsonaro, you know, you might not agree with that, but that's increasingly how it's looking. He basically dismissed the guy, dismissed him as irrelevant. I don't know Chico Mendes, he said. He said this yesterday, actually. And basically, what difference does it make who he is at the moment? And just basically ridiculing him, ridiculing his stance, ridiculing environmentalism. And Bolsonaro has gone on record as saying that he really doesn't care about the Amazon rainforest. He's going to increase all kinds of development, quote-unquote development, which is basically code word for destruction. And basically, you know, do the same kind of stupid things that Trump is promising to do and has been doing. It's the last thing the world needs, especially in the Amazon. But it's also indicative of the short-sightedness that we're seeing all around the planet with our ultranationalism and our fear of anything different or unknown and willingness to just destroy for short-term gains. And nothing else is more important than fighting back and preserving our environment, because without that, it doesn't really matter. None of the other conflicts matter at all if we don't have a place to live.
Truly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's very wise to just follow the lead and really communicate and ally with some of the indigenous people who have been fighting oil extraction and those movements. They are telling. They are on the front line, so to speak, in these areas like the rainforest, where there's so much habitat loss and you know, we need to be coordinated as a species in coming up with solutions and fighting the, as you put it, the terrorism of economy and these just terrible leaders.
So anyway, I think that's pretty much all we can say on the subject right now. We have to wake up. We have to start taking action. We have to start holding these people accountable, treating them as they are. They are terrorists. What else would you call somebody whose actions result in such calamity? It's, you know, we have to say enough. And I think, you know, people left, right, doesn't matter. I think people care about where they live. Again, ask yourself, what is the rationale of somebody making this up? Why would someone, first of all, you know, we're dealing with scientists here. Scientists versus politicians. Who do you believe when it comes to science? You know, it's not a debatable issue. It really is not. And we have to move away from entertaining the notion that there are two sides to this. No, there are not two sides to an indisputable fact. And that's something that I think the media has to hold some accountability for. We have to focus on this and take action, and there's no excuse. Otherwise, you know, it falls on us. It falls on us as well for not doing enough. No one else is going to do it for us, you know, because the people we elect are ones who are not doing enough or working against us, working against the planet. So it's absolutely essential that we hold them accountable, that we raise our voices, we show up in droves. And, you know, as Kyle said at the top of the hour, we do more on individual levels, absolutely. But let's not fool ourselves and think just doing that is going to get us out of this. It's not.
Yeah, and forcing the market, you know, demanding things of the market. And as you said, don't listen to people that don't have a clue what they're talking about and then draw false equivalencies and say really stupid things. It's more harmful to appear to be an authority on a surface level and basically prevent people from looking deeper into these issues. I heard something in the State of the Union rally last night in Texas. I'm sorry. It was a political rally for the president. And he was making these comments about different types of fuel and the Green New Deal disrupting aviation. Stuff that makes no sense, that, you know, there can't be alternatives and different ways of running transportation or where we derive our energy from. He doesn't know what he's talking about, or he's saying things that are not true, that even the companies you'd think he's saying those as a result of, even they know they can, you know, do all kinds of different things technologically. And he's just protecting these, like, bygone industries, stuff that it really makes no sense for the kind of future we're experiencing. And that all these issues really deserve a careful look, a close look, you know, under the surface. And this is the moment to make those changes. And, yeah, I just don't want people to think they can't, they can stop and just, you know, to be resigned in their homes. So if you're in your home and you're feeling down, yeah, there's plenty of things you can do just in your house to make the environment last a little bit longer, at least. But it's a really interesting topic. We could go on and on. I could go on for a long time talking about this stuff.
You know, we should go on. Everybody should be going on. This should be number one on the news every day. When I saw the story about the insects yesterday, everything else paled in comparison. That is the thing we should be focusing on. Number one above all else, planet-wide. Because it affects everybody. It will affect our kids, our grandkids, our very future as a race, the human race on this. So never mind the white race or the black race or any races, or any nationalities or any religions. None of it is going to matter if we let this continue.
Well, and think about what those companies that have made those pesticides are saying. They're going to say, well, we have to feed everyone. And this kind of is what I was getting at with our models having such low costs. Well, we want to feed everyone at a certain rate, and don't understand that you know there is a consequence of choosing certain types of farming over others. That's why, you know, organic and less intensive or, you know, stuff that's less mechanized and commercialized is a more costly fruit or vegetable, right? But, you know, to sacrifice the natural biome and ecosystems and habitats so that we can have a mechanized head of cabbage or you know, broccoli or whatever, that's an interesting trade. I mean, yeah, you have to feed people, but maybe the cost should be factored in that, you know, food is to be created another way. Like, that's one calculation for one business model to sacrifice this 2.5% or whatever you said the loss of insect is, because that's what these really strong synthesized insecticides are doing. So it makes you think, wow, all those things like, you know, organic food or local food, the things that have been said many times before and probably will be reminded, you know, a reminder in the future, they all stand, you know, a lot of that natural and that type of farming is so important. We need to encourage it. We need to share the knowledge and people need to understand why that stuff is beneficial in the bigger picture, even if it feels like it's just your garden or, you know, your herbs.
Well, plus, you know, there are ways of controlling the insects that are destroying your food supply without destroying all insects. The fact that bees are dying off, there's no reason in the world to kill bees, but we're doing that. We're doing that with insecticide. It's stupid. It's not focused on what the actual problems are. Yes, insects can spread disease. They can cause all kinds of damage. And there are times when you need to eradicate that, but not at the cost of the beneficial kind. And we cannot dispute that insects serve a valuable purpose. But I was just looking at a news report about climate change on CNN with reduced emissions. What we're looking at in New York in 2080, we will feel more like Lakeshore, Maryland. So that means 4.5 degrees warmer. I have to assume that this is Fahrenheit. 4.5 degrees warmer and a bit wetter, 1.2% wetter than New York currently. Now, with high emissions, that's where we're going right now. New York's climate in 2080 will feel more like Jonesboro, Arkansas. Typically 9.1 degrees warmer, 20.8% drier than New York. But imagine what Jonesboro, Arkansas will feel like. Imagine what Texas will feel like, you know, when you start adding these numbers up. And that's only 2080. If that continues, it becomes unlivable fairly quickly.
Yeah, those places become so arid that even, like what you're saying, asking chemical companies to be less indiscriminate with, you know, how they kill life with their chemicals, it just seems so silly in the context of the conversation, but they have to scale up the product so that it can saturate all the crops for all the people that need to be fed. So that you're asking a chemical company to, you know, do that legwork, it just seems like the wrong people to be consulting it. Like I said, it should be about how we set up our systems of food safety, food security. And in the context, yeah, you have a countdown clock for when these places actually become arid and less hospitable to any kind of plant life, let alone pests.
Yeah, that's right. Well, this is something that's obviously affecting the entire country, affecting the entire world. But, you know, there's one conclusion here that gives me some hope, and that's Mothers Against Drunk Driving was cited as a popular group advocating for changes in drunken driving laws. They had a big effect. Small group of very angry mothers changed all the laws in the United States. They probably charged them too. It's possible to make rapid change in short periods of time. We need the collective action and individual action and change. This is possible. And I that's the one thing that I think we should add to all these discussions, because, you know, the piece that preceded this show on Democracy Now!, it was pessimistic. It was very pessimistic. Even if we stop all emissions, we're still kind of screwed. Yeah, okay, that doesn't really get us anywhere. It might be true. It probably is. But we need to start thinking of our empowerment, what we can do, what we can accomplish. It is possible to make change And if you don't believe that, if you think it's too late, what's the point of anything? We have to move forward with as positive an outlook as we possibly can muster up, but also with as much of a determined outlook as we can possibly muster, and holding those people accountable, taking action against them, stopping them by whatever means necessary.
Yeah, and I think a big emphasis on sinking carbon needs to be made, and that, you know, they, all of these different solutions and technologies are kind of mixed together, but really all of them are necessary, will be required, and there's a lot of entities, a lot of students, a lot of startups, a lot of people working on ways to sink carbon and to solve some of these problems. But I think it's all of it, and the alternatives to stop using certain forms of energy and so on, and certain technologies. But the solutions need not be necessarily competitive. They, I think, should all work symbiotically, and I hope people really take on this stuff. And as you said, like, the pessimism is, it's palpable, and I think there's a lot of despair. But the people working on this stuff, they need to communicate and get advocacy and the kind of enthusiasm that they have, that they're passionate about that particular area of interest and topic, and be able to communicate it widely, so that people who are working in bigger ways on this as a project can incorporate and bring in their knowledge and be able to answer questions and face strong debate with them as an example of how to go forward. But it really is about communicating and getting motivated and moving forward in every way you can possibly think of.
Hey, we're going to do something we haven't done in a couple of months, and that's open phone lines. And the reason we stopped was because people weren't calling, and it just made Long Island seem like a bunch of brain-dead people who couldn't be bothered with any opinions whatsoever. You know, and this time and age, there is so much to talk about. There is so much controversy. There is so much that affects us. And you really can't get more direct than this. So our phone lines are open for the remainder of the hour, 631-632-9872, 631-632-WUSB. If you want to call in, we will put you on the air, and you can spout forth with whatever you have to say. Love to hear from you. We really would. And if the phone keeps ringing, call back, you know, if it stops ringing at some point, if we don't get to you in time. So you mentioned the rally yesterday. I was watching the rally in El Paso with Trump. I was getting very worried because it was just nothing but angry crowds chanting. I don't know what these people are so angry about all the time, but they are. They're angry, and he was riling them up, like, unbelievably. And I have to admit, it was kind of scary. We've been watching, you know, a lot of World War II era films, but you know, seeing how armies were being raised in many places, how people were being outraged and acting against other people, and you see the symptoms, you kind of recognize it. And sure enough, after this rally or during this rally, I'm reading the reports today. I didn't even know about this, but it's not something I was surprised by. A supporter of Trump attacked the BBC cameraman at that campaign rally in El Paso, sporting a Make America Great Again hat. The man shoved and swore at the BBC's Ron Skeens and other news crews before being pulled away. Mr. Skeens said the very hard shove came from his blind side. I didn't know what was going on. Trump saw the attack and confirmed Mr. Skeens was well with a thumbs up after it happened. I don't know, he gave him a thumbs up or he gave the attacker a thumbs up. BBC has written to White House Press Secretary Sarah Sanders asking for a review of security arrangements for the media attending the president's rallies following the attack. As you know, the president has had a bad relationship with the press, calling them the enemy of the people, slamming quote-unquote fake news for reports he deems unfavorable. Mr. Skeens said the man almost knocked him and his camera over twice before he was wrestled away by, get this, a blogger. I don't know how you know he was a blogger, but somebody who was able to save the day. But, wow, it's just unreal. It's not right. And it's something that we have to speak out against, act against. And, hey, we have a phone call, so I'm not going to turn down this opportunity. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Go ahead.
A long-time listener to a couple of your shows, and I get on your websites, and have met some of you guys, showed up at a Hope one of these years, and you know, it's so sad for you to hear you say something like, and I'm not being negative, and I'm not putting down what you said, mm-hmm. something like 2080, when they're saying, you know, maybe in the next 12 or 10 years, we're just not going to be able to survive because of what we've done to the planet.
Right.
Well, I promise I won't hold my breath till 2080 because I'm going to be 60. But
wow. Well, I mean, you'll be pretty young then. Yeah. You know, considering that's a number of years away. It's something
bad.
That we all have to take issue with, whether or not we're going to be around in that year or not. Our kids, our grandkids certainly will be. And, you know, we should care about generations beyond that as well.
And then I hear all this twisted stuff, you know, like George W. Bush, the son of the former Bush that was in the presidency, just got up and walked away from the table at the Kyoto Conference for world, let's say, ecology.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was just a terrible, terrible thing to do in the face of the rest of the world that the world needed us, and we just turned our asses on them and bent over and left.
Right, and leaving the Paris Accord after that. We know so much more now than we did then, not excusing him in any way, but everything he's done seems to pale in comparison with what's happening today.
But then there's this goofball who's just on the same planet, you know, and God forbid when a president says, if a president says, we got to consider some of this, a lot of people are going to say, what are you talking about? That's not what we do. We don't do that. Oh, well, it's just an ad hoc. So what? It's not. Oh, come on.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You and I are from the North Shore, and we know the differences, and we know the climate changes and the nonsense. We don't have any snow. We don't have any freaking snow this year. What are you talking about?
Yeah, well,
we get snow on the East Coast.
We had some snow today, but you're right. We have not had enough, and it's bugging me.
It's not bugging others because, thank God we don't have any snow. That's okay, but something's wrong. And look who's getting snow. Texas? Is it me? Because we know better. But I want to also make a statement that Isabel and your team there at USB and your other team at WBAI with the Off the Hook show, it's just phenomenal.
Well, thank you.
And I go
thank
on
you
your
much.
Website and I recommend it to others. I don't mean WBA, and I recommend WBA, and I recommend USB over and over and over. But I also recommend your website, 2600. Is it .net, .com?
It's actually both. It's even .org.
I kind of know. It just confused me from the beginning. So.
It confused other people, too. That's why we got all three.
It's also .horse.
And
wow.
We can't get phones right, and they say, I don't get a signal here, or I got cut off, but we talked to someone on the moon? Oh, come on.
Uh-huh.
It can be done, and
it's
and
possible,
then,
absolutely.
When they want to do it their way, they want to go to 5G, they won't have 5G allowed in certain government buildings because they're the ones passing the law that they know how bad it is for you.
Right.
You know, or why don't you just put another cancer-causing agent in everybody's neighborhood and then let the people that are putting it there say, yes, but it won't happen in my neighborhood. Oh, come on.
Well, that's a whole other issue, and we don't have time to get into that tonight. But we probably, if we survive, the human race survives longer, we'll definitely cover that as well. But
you'll survive better if you check in on 2600.net.org.
All right. Thanks so much for your call and for your support.
Thanks, guys. I'm the guy that was used to be on the Board of Elections, Brad from Brentwood.
Okay. Well, good hearing from you. Thank you for your call. And we'll open up the phone lines for other calls, 631-632-9872. Dot horse, really? Why is there a dot horse?
We have dot horse.
Okay, fine.
It was a gift. It was a gift horse, okay.
Well, you can't look those in the mouth.
No. But also XXX, I believe.
That's right. We have that, too. We have the pornographic domain somehow.
2600.xxx.
Yeah. Wow. Okay.
That was a nice call.
It was. It
very
was a good
friendly.
Call. Good hearing from our listeners again. I know there's more out there. We'll take more phone calls if they come in.
Yeah. We're by no means experts, but it's great that we're entertaining. I that's how I look at such adulation. And we do our best to have an interesting conversation. We love hearing how it lands and what people think. And, yes, go on.
Everybody, everybody's fighting the battle in their own way. Now, you probably don't know this name, but I'm sure a lot of listeners here remember the name Warner Wolf. He was the sportscaster on, I think, Channel 7. Actually, you know, they always, you know, jump around from channel to channel. But I know he was on Channel 7 for many years. And he's apparently living in Florida now, in Naples, Florida.
Okay.
And he's facing a felony charge after police say he damaged a sign outside his Florida community because it included the word plantation, which he considers racist. Well, how about that, Warner? Pretty woke there. The 81-year-old Wolf surrendered on Thursday on a felony criminal mischief charge and was released. The sheriff's office says Wolf long complained about his community's name, Classics Plantation Estates. Deputies say surveillance video shows Wolf removing the letters on November 30th. They say he gave the letters to a security guard, telling him to pass them to the property manager. Damage somehow is estimated at $1,100. He gave the letters. How does any damage? They can just put them back. Wolf declined to comment on Saturday, and his attorney did not immediately return a phone call. He announced baseball, football, and the Olympics for ABC in the 1970s, did sportscasts in Washington, D.C. and New York. So he's quite a famous guy around here. Good for him, you know, taking a stand on something. Why is the place called Classics Plantation Estates? That does seem racist. Why do you live there, though? Why did you move into that place?
It's like a mashup, yeah.
But we all choose our battles. And he chose this battle, and, I think that's an appropriate battle for an 81-year-old in Naples, Florida to, you know, take on that sign and do something about it. He deserves some credit for at least taking a stand. For caring.
Yeah, and shaking up the community down there. I'm sure others are going to take note. People in the area will observe this act, and it'll redefine the neighborhood, and people will get with the program.
I will never condemn somebody for caring, even if I disagree with them. But, you know, for taking action, for standing for your beliefs, that's what really matters. That's all that really matters. And you know what? That's a good segue. We have to talk about this Ilhan Omar controversy that's been going on.
Yes.
Oh, my God. You know, I have so much good to say about Nancy Pelosi over the last couple of weeks because she really, you know, she butted heads with Donald Trump. She stood her ground. She won. She did that whole applause thing at the State of the Union last week. Oh, that was I never saw applause used as a weapon before. But she did it, and she pulled it off. And I admit I was wrong for thinking that there should be somebody else as Speaker of the House because she's really holding her own. Until yesterday, when she really disappointed me and annoyed me by insisting that Ilhan Omar apologize and that she was making anti-Semitic remarks. Okay, you know, she said something in response to Glenn Greenwald, who happens to be Jewish, by the way, or at least was brought up in a Jewish household, saying that, the Israeli lobby is all about the Benjamins. Yeah, you know what? Any lobby is all about the Benjamins, meaning it's all about money. I honestly don't think that she was intentionally hearkening back to that quote-unquote trope, which is basically just a figure of speech. That word somehow appears when it comes to things like this. We never use the word unless it's about something like this. But, yeah, anti-Semitic trope is basically a figure of speech. It's hard for me to believe, because I didn't really see it that way when it was said in the first place, nor did I see something previously that she said about Israel hypnotizing the world with their policies. That apparently is another trope as well. Okay, you know, fair enough. This can offend some people, and if it does, should be addressed. But to accuse her of intentionally doing that, I think that in itself is pretty offensive, and it's pretty easy also to pick on one of the two Muslim women in Congress, first ever, and say that they need to be reined in, that they are anti-Semitic for criticizing Israel, and for even equating Israeli policy with a Jewish agenda. That, to me, is anti-Semitic. And that is what a lot of people are saying when they attack her. Now, I want to read you a couple of things from this publication. Following two things are true. First, Representative Ilhan Omar was wrong to tweet that the American government's support of Israel is all about the Benjamins. Secondly, she's being judged by a grotesque double standard. Her fiercest critics in Congress are guiltier of bigotry than she is. Omar's tweet was inaccurate. Yes, of course, AIPAC's influence rests partly on the money its members donate to politicians, but it also rests on a deep cultural and religious affinity for Israel among conservative white Christians who see the Jewish state as an outpost of pro-American Judeo-Christian values in a region they consider hostile to their country and faith. American conservatives have long admired small pro-American countries and regions dominated by America's adversaries. Omar's tweet was also irresponsible. It was irresponsible because leaders should understand that their words carry historical baggage. Accusing a largely, though not officially, Jewish organization like AIPAC of buying politicians is different than accusing the NRA or the drug industry of buying politicians, because modern history is not replete with murderous conspiracy theories about how gun owners and pharmaceutical executives secretly use their money to control governments.
Although should be, perhaps.
Well, I think give it time, and they certainly will be. But that doesn't mean it's illegitimate to talk about AIPAC's fundraising any more than it's illegitimate to talk about O.J. Simpson killing a white woman. Given the toxic stereotypes that such discussions evoke, however, they must be handled with care. And Ilhan Omar didn't do that, which is why she was right to apologize. Okay, you know, this is the most rational explanation I've heard yet, all right? Why she was right to apologize last month for a 2012 tweet, in which she also evoked anti-Semitic stereotypes by accusing Israel of having hypnotized the world about its behavior in the Gaza Strip. Okay, fair enough. Explain like that, but, you know, you're not demonizing her. You're saying that, yeah, you know, if you say something that way, it evokes certain reactions in people, and you have to be careful. And, you know, and it's explained like that, that makes perfect sense. And we can move on. Continuing with this article, though, if we're going to demand that politicians apologize for any hint of association with bigotry, let's not stop with Ilhan Omar. Let's hold her critics to the same standard. You know, establishing two legal systems in the same territory, one for Jews and one for Palestinians, as Israel does in the West Bank, is bigotry. Guaranteeing Jews in the West Bank citizenship, due process, free movement, the right to vote for the government that controls their lives, while denying those rights to their Palestinian neighbors, is bigotry. It's a far more tangible form of bigotry than Omar's flirtation with anti-Semitic tropes, and it has lasted for more than half a century. Yet, almost all of Omar's Republican critics in Congress endorse this bigotry, et cetera, et cetera. This comes from a publication called The Forward, which is a Jewish publication. In fact, it's been coming out in English and in Yiddish since, I believe, 1897.
Whoa.
And, sadly, last month, they stopped their print edition after all that time. Now, it's a digital publication, Forward.com.
Okay.
I believe is there. And, you know, it's really fascinating to read. And, you know, if you want some perspective on this, listen to the Jewish community. Listen to what people in that community are saying about this, because I got to tell you, a lot more woke than what you're hearing from the right wing in our country.
And in general, put things in perspective, people.
Uh-huh.
For real.
Absolutely. And, you know, none is more guilty than our own Representative Lee Zeldin, once again, who has had a target on Ilhan Omar for a long, long time. Ever since he saw a Muslim woman coming into Congress, he has had a problem with it. I want to read you an article from another publication, SplinterNews.com, title of which, and this is the title, is the actual title, Republican Asshole Accepts Ilhan Omar's Invite to Tea After Badgering Her on Twitter. That is the headline. I did not make this up. Following a week of being accused of anti-Semitism by GOP Representative Lee Zeldin of New York, and this predates what happened yesterday.
All this stuff.
This is at the beginning of the month. A man who called her appointment to the House Foreign Affairs Committee crazy, and he did this a while ago. You know, he's calling for her to be stripped of that because, you know, to him it's all about politics. It's not about anti-Semitism or about any form of justice. No, he just wants her off that committee, and he'll do anything he can to get her off that committee.
Political expedience.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
Look at what these people are saying.
Totally.
They just want her off that committee, and they will look at anything and attack her for anything to make that happen. So he's been at this for a while. So he called her appointment to the House Foreign Affairs Committee crazy. Minnesota Representative Ilhan Omar extended an invitation to Zeldin to talk about religious discrimination over Somali tea. She's Somalian. Even though this guy seems like a pretty unreasonable asshole, whom you would not want to share a hot beverage with in any capacity. Wow. On Thursday night, Zeldin, who is Jewish, tweeted a voicemail left at his office of a man calling Jews maggots and bloodsuckers directly at Omar, expressing that this is just another day in my world as an American Jew, as if Omar, a Muslim Somali woman and a refugee, has no idea what discrimination feels like. You know, basically pointing that at her, like she somehow is responsible for that.
Yeah.
My God. Omar responded a few hours later, denouncing the voicemail and offering to settle the dispute over tea in Omar's D.C. office, which Zeldin used to occupy. Did he know that?
She took his office.
Why? Why did he change offices? I don't understand that. I mean, he's a congressman again. Unfortunately, that happened.
The world may never know.
No, maybe he got moved downstairs or something. I don't know. Anyway, Zeldin accepted, albeit in a characteristically dickish and grandstanding fashion, asking her to back a resolution rejecting anti-Israel and anti-Semitic hatred in the United States and around the world. Yeah, that's his thing right now. I'll get to that in a second. The text of the resolution denounces statements made by both Omar and Representative Rashida Tlaib, the only two Muslim women in Congress, and equates them with white supremacist Richard Spencer and black nationalist Louis Farrakhan. Right. Now, this episode has been going on all week. Now, keep in mind, this is prior to this week. Zeldin took the first shot on Tuesday when he tweeted that he found it crazy to watch what House Dems are empowering / elevating following Omar's appointment to the Oversight and Investigations Subcommittee of the House Foreign Affairs Committee. After being called out for his Islamophobia, Zeldin continued to call Omar anti-Semitic and anti-Israel, and the two traded shots on Twitter. Now, it's worth noting that she recently apologized for using anti-Semitic language in a 2012 tweet about Israel, which was referenced in the resolution. She said on Twitter she didn't know the word portrayed an anti-Semitic trope at the time, and I would bet most people don't, all right, to her credit. Called her usage of the word unfortunate and offensive. She did that. Still, Zeldin continues to push the narrative that Omar doesn't denounce anti-Semitism or find the behavior ugly or offensive. And while Zeldin might have accepted Omar's invitation for tea, he doesn't seem as interested in bringing his similarities with Omar, his similarities with Omar, as he is concerned with trying to see how much bullying it'll take to get her to fall in line with the bipartisan Israel can do nothing wrong caucus. You don't have to do this, Omar. You don't have to entertain a disingenuous man's engagement like they want women to do all the goddamn time. But if you absolutely must, take it as an opportunity to gloat that you're in Congress, in his old office, and won't be going anywhere anytime soon. Again, that's from splinternews.com. Brilliant piece there. And, yeah, it's so annoying to see this happening, to see someone being talked down to like this. You know, as explained in the foreword, we see how remarks like that can be interpreted. She sees that. She acknowledges that. And we all need to learn from this and realize that we all can do better. But people like Zeldin never get that. They just latch on to this particular thing and want to categorize people in a certain way. All Muslims are bad. All Muslims are enemies. That's one hell of a coincidence that he's just picking on the two Muslim women in Congress as his biggest enemies. But, you know, also to basically attach anti-Semitism to anti-Israeli policy. The two are nothing close. And to do that, you know, in my opinion, is the biggest example of anti-Semitism there is, because you're basically condemning an entire religion to the policies of a country, which oftentimes does not reflect that religion, because the Jewish religion has nothing to do with occupation or, ruling over people, apartheid societies like they have, all sorts of horrible things, any more so than the Muslim religion is allied with horrible dictatorships and regimes that we all condemn. So this kind of thing needs to be separated, needs to be stopped. But it's a problem that exists throughout our political system, throughout our mass culture. This Israel can do no wrong lobby. You know, look at your late night talk shows. See how many people actually speak out against Israeli policy. Very often they won't, because they're afraid. They're afraid of the power that lobby has. That lobby has a lot of power. And yes, a lot of money. There is a lot of money involved too, as with any lobby. That is just a reality of the situation. So people need to be encouraged to speak up and criticize and not be labeled if you dare to do that. You know, there are Democratic politicians, including our own governor, that want to make it a crime or something that's punishable if you engage in a boycott of Israel. You know, I'll tell you, the moment they make that a crime, I will boycott Israel. Just like if you tell me I can't boycott Spain, I will boycott Spain the second you tell me I can't do it. How dare you? How dare you say that I am required to support a foreign country because you're getting something out of it, because, you know, we have some kind of agreement with them. Well, you know what? Every country is guilty of something. Name a country, Kyle. Name a country. I will criticize that country.
Mozambique.
Okay. Name a country that I've been to.
What?
Well, because I don't know
you
much about Mozambique.
Rules in the last...
Well, I don't know that much about Mozambique. I'm sorry. I don't want to criticize a country without knowing something about it.
Denmark.
It's too far away. That's my criticism of Mozambique.
Denmark,
too many rules. My God, people. I mean, you know, you all wait at the red light. You're supposedly tolerant of everybody, right? You let Christianity exist. But God forbid somebody step out of line just a little bit and they get criticized, and it's really, and you know what? Why are all the kids drinking so young? I just saw a piece on Vice News about that last night. But okay, pick one more.
France.
France. Oh, what can I say about France? I should have a lot of. There's too many easy targets there. Well, they've totally ruined yellow vests for everybody, haven't they? I mean, what if you just want to wear a yellow vest? How do you direct traffic now without starting a protest? That's not really a criticism. It's more a question. I can't think of bad things to say about France. Wow.
I can.
Okay, go ahead.
All your architecture with glass floors and crazy.
Yeah, but you don't like glass. I like glass floors.
Oh my God.
Yeah, that's. But yeah, with your lack of fear of heights, French people, I don't get that either. Okay, I can do better than this. I can criticize more. I can say that Turkey is fascist. They don't like it when you say that. I can say the Thai king is stupid. They don't like that at all. You know, I can say all kinds. I don't necessarily believe them, but I have the right to say these things. And how dare you tell me I don't have the right to criticize Israel? I will criticize them. I will criticize everybody.
And Duterte is an idiot.
Oh, I would never say that.
What?
Wow. Okay.
Wait,
well,
I thought
now you can't ever go to the Philippines.
We were all saying that. What?
I've never said that. I never said that. No.
But no, you said we could say
he kills people that use drugs because the drugs will kill them, and he's just taking a shortcut.
I'm trying to use drugs now.
The point is, you know, we are free to express ourselves. We always should be. We should be free to have these conversations. Anybody that does otherwise is anti-freedom, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, one thing I think is coming out of what you've been saying is really we need to have space. We need to be allowed to make mistakes. And especially with these tropes and anti-Semitism, we need to give people a little room to make some mistakes, especially people that are from opposite ends of cultural, religious, or ethnic diaspora. Those are where you're going to have the most sort of speed bumps and difficulties relating. But I think there's the more we can educate, the more we can talk about these things, the less it festers as something that's not spoken of.
Uh-huh.
And I think that's when the populism wins. That's when people come out and they express really, really distasteful and deplorable attitudes and truly anti-Semitic views. That's when that stuff comes out, when it's not talking about, when people prance around and on eggshells and act as though something cannot even be broached. I think then you have people fearing any discussion as a mistake, and that's a problem.
Right.
You need people to be able to mess up, even if they're a leader, and then be corrected or self-correct, and then have that be a part of dispelling the trope itself.
Less condemnation, more conversation. I think that is
sure.
What you're shooting for there.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
That brings to mind the Virginia governor, who I learned yesterday, more African Americans want him to stay in office than white people, which I find to be amazing. And, you know, if people can find it in themselves to forgive him and to say to themselves, are we better off with this guy in power? Are we better off with some Republican in power if everybody there resigns because of what they've done in the past? You know, that's something we should listen to. And, you know, I had not considered that a week ago, but I'm listening now. If people think that he actually would do more good in power than not in power, we have to consider that. The other thing I was thinking, though, if we do move ahead and everybody resigns, you start with the attorney general. Can't he appoint a new attorney general and then he resigns and then that attorney general becomes governor? I don't know. That was my thinking last week. But it's an ongoing situation. It's an interesting situation for sure. But the whole blackface controversy, that is something that we definitely should be talking about, should be confronting, and should not be hiding. So many issues,
There shouldn't be no-go topics.
No,
there really ought
not.
In a free society, that, let's not forget. And that's it came up at the beginning of the show when you were talking about Trump voters and at these rallies being angry. They won. Let's not forget.
Uh-huh.
That these are the winners.
Yeah.
These are the winners. These are the people making America great, okay?
Yeah, but they realize that their life still sucks and they're not making America great, so maybe that's what's pissing them off so much.
I mean that all in full sarcasm.
But the final point I want to make is that, this anti-Semitism accusation, let's focus on the real enemies. You know, we went to Auschwitz and it was a horrible scene.
Oh, yeah.
Very emotional. It's something I think everybody should go to in the right circumstance. It's not something you go to with all your best buds from class. You go as an individual and you sink it in and you feel terrible and you basically have a hard time falling asleep afterwards. That is something everybody needs to do. And seeing something like that makes me realize how clueless those people are who just like to throw anti-Semitic accusations at people for criticizing Israel, not realizing that the true anti-Semites are right here at home. They're the people, the white supremacists, chanting all kinds of things about how Jews won't replace them. People that, representatives like Lee Zeldin will not condemn, but he will condemn Arabs or Muslims simply because there is a conflict between those people, or in his mind, between those people. When in actuality, going to Auschwitz, seeing the pictures, reading the stories, I realized the similarities between the Jewish people and the Arab people. There are such similarities in struggle, achieving greatness, in just their lifestyle, beliefs, things like that. There are more similarities than differences, I think. And when you really start thinking about this hard, whose interest is it in to have them constantly fighting each other? I think these are people that can find so much common ground and get along in such incredible and inspiring ways. But, for the fundamentalists around us, for the people that want the power dynamic to remain as it is, having them constantly fighting, having Israel constantly under attack and under threat, that serves their purpose. And we've seen it in Christian fundamentalism, where Israel has to be in a certain place at a certain time when Jesus comes back. It's all this crap that they spread around that anyone with a brain would not buy into that. And hopefully people see that they're being led down a bad path. So these are things to consider. These are things to think about when these accusations are being hurled around, when these discussions are happening. It's not as black and white as it might seem.
No, it never is. And it's always worth having some critical thinking at your disposal.
Amen. Hey, we're out of time. OTW@2600.com is our email address, and Finn is coming up next. We didn't get to talk about the wall. We didn't get to talk about immigrants and migrants. And we talked a little bit about hatred and oppression and things like that. So I guess it's not a total loss.
Will we take phone calls again?
We will take phone calls again. Thank you for the caller that called in. I'm sorry to the people we didn't get to. I saw the phone was ringing, but we were on tirade, so it's a little hard. But we'll be back in next week talking about all kinds of other things. Good night.
The crops are all in and the peaches are rotting. The oranges are stacked in their creosote dumps. They're flying them back to that Mexico border to pay all their wages to wade back again. Goodbye to you, Juan. Goodbye, Rosalita. Adios, mi amigo, Jesus and Maria. You won't have a name when you ride the big airplane, and all they will call you will be deportee. My father's own father, he waded that river. They took all the money he made in his life. My brothers and sisters come working the fruit trees, and they rode on the trucks till they took down and died. Goodbye to my one, goodbye, Rosalita. Adios, mi amigo, Jesus and Maria. You won't have a name when you ride the big airplane, and all they will call you will be deportee. Well, some are illegal and some are not wanted. Our work contract's out and we've got to move on. 600 miles to that Mexico border. They chase us like outlaws, like rustlers, like thieves. Goodbye to my one, goodbye, Rosalita. Adios, mi amigo, Jesus and Maria. You won't have a name when you ride the big airplane, and all they will call you will be deportee. We died in your hills and we died on your deserts. We died in your valleys, we died on your plains. We died neath your trees and we died in your bushes. Both sides of that river, we died just the same. Goodbye to my one, goodbye, Rosalita. Adios, mi amigo, Jesus and Maria. You won't have a name when you ride the big airplane, and all they will call you will be deportee. The sky plane caught fire over Los Gatos Canyon, like a fireball of lightning, and shook all our hills. Who are all these friends all scattered like dry leaves? The radio says they are just deportees. Goodbye to my one, goodbye, Rosalita. Adios, mi amigo, Jesus and Maria. You won't have a name when you ride the big airplane, and all they will call you will be deportee. Is this the best way we can grow our big orchards? Is this the best way we can grow our good fruit? To fall like dry leaves and rot on my topsoil, and be known by no name except deportee. Goodbye to my one, goodbye, Rosalita. Adios, mi amigo, Jesus and Maria. You won't have a name when you ride the big airplane, and all they will call you will be deportees.